Here we go on another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We are in Genesis chapter 16 today, and we were right in the middle of a story, so I want to go back to verse number 8 to kind of pick up the context for the wrapping up of that story. Now, you know the situation where Sarai had decided that they should help God out, and that they should use a surrogate program in order for Abram to have this son that God had been talking to him about. And so she volunteered, we'll put that in air quotes there, one of her single servants, a woman by the name of Hagar, and this woman got pregnant. Now, the baby would be biologically hers and Abram's, but it would be legally Abram's and Sarai's child. That's the way that it would work according to the ancient legal codes and the traditions. Once she got pregnant, Hagar got an attitude, and Sarai got an attitude as well. And she takes that attitude to Abram, and Abram's situation was basically, you guys take care of it. You take care of it. She's your servant. And in the process of Sarai treating Hagar roughly, Hagar decides to run away. All right, so that's where the story was. She was running away from home. She was actually heading back, apparently, toward Egypt. And she gets challenged by a messenger from God. The angel of the Lord appears to her down south of Hebron, which is where all of this was taking place. So verse number 8 of Genesis 16, he, meaning the angel, said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from? Where are you going? Now, God already knows, and the angel already knows. She said, I'm fleeing from my mistress Sarai. The angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress and submit to her. In other words, you go back home and you behave yourself better. You know, don't be rude towards Sarai just because she can't have kids. And you can. That was never appropriate. Sarai is going to need to also get her attitude adjusted. Verse 10, though. The angel of he who is, the angel of the Lord, also said to her, I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be numbered for multitude. So that's the promise that those descended from Ishmael, because that's what his name is going to be, are going to be huge in number. And they are. We're talking about the non-Jewish peoples of the Middle East, effectively. Most of them Muslim, but not all of them. These are descendants of Ishmael. Verse 11, the angel of he who is told her, behold, you're pregnant, you shall bear a son, you shall give his name or call his name Ishmael. So Ishmael means God hears, or God is listening, or God has heard, because, the angel said, he who is has listened to your affliction. So that is why I have great confidence in saying that Sarai was not right in how she treated Hagar, roughly, even though Hagar had copped an attitude as well. So God is sorting things out here and sending her back home. Gives a prediction about Ishmael and, by extension, his descendants. He shall be a wild donkey of a man, which may be an indicator that he is kind of a wild person, likes being out on his own, that sort of thing. His hand against everyone and everyone's hand against him. You know, some of these extreme individuals that like to be on their own. They don't necessarily get along with other people around them. And he shall dwell over against all his kinsmen, or possibly to the east, in the face is the literal wording of it, but in Middle Eastern parlance, the east is the face side of a person. And so east is faceward, southward is the right hand, northward is the left hand, and west is behind you. All right, so he's going to live off to the east of a lot of his relatives, which they do. Just think about today. The Israelis, who are relatives of these guys here, they live along the coastland of the Middle East, of Israel. Where do the Arabs live? Well, they live Saudi Arabia, Jordan, places like that, which are typically to the east of Israel proper. Verse number 13, and I think we had kind of started to wrap this up, but I really wanted to come and emphasize some of these things. So she called the name of he who is who spoke to her, "You are a God of seeing." So there it is, the idea that he has seen her affliction. That's why the boy's name is going to be Yishmael. And she says, "You are a God that sees. You are a God that looks on to what's going on with me. For she said, truly, here I have seen him who looks after me." And so not only is God seeing me, I see God. I believe this is a really good indication that Hagar has converted from whatever religion she might have had coming out of Egypt to the faith of Abram and Sarai, the belief in the one true God, the creator God. And so she gives a name to the place where this happened. Verse 14, "Therefore the well was called Bir," which is the word for well, "Lahai Roy." So the rest of that means the living one who sees me. So it's the well of the living one who sees me. It's between Kadesh and Bered. So it's in the Negev. It's in the northern Negev, south of Beersheba somewhere. And we'll have it mentioned in a later story in relationship to Isaac. But exactly where it's at, nobody knows for sure. Verse 15. So in between verse 14 and 15, Hagar goes home, and she does what the Holy Spirit, through the message of the angel, said. She buckles down and submits to Sarai. She behaves herself, and she becomes a surrogate mother to a son of Abram and Sarai. Hagar bore Abram a son. And Abram called the name of his son whom Hagar bore Yishmael, which tells me that she told the story of God sending an angel to her and talking to her and sending her home. And so Abram believes all of that and incorporates it into his own response and names the boy exactly what God wanted him named. And then we have the chronological information. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Yishmael to Abram. So it's been 11 years now since Abram and Sarai arrived in the Promised Land. And now they have a baby. And again, you have to remember that while Hagar is going to be the birth mother and be very involved in the raising of Yishmael, that Sarai is the legal mother, the traditional mother, because of the surrogacy situation of Yishmael. So there is going to be a close relationship between these four people. Maybe not so much between Sarai and Hagar, but certainly Sarai looks at Ishmael as her son. That will be important in a later story. Chapter 17 jumps us ahead 13 years. Think about that. 13 years now, we move forward. What's been going on? Well, all the normal stuff of life. They've been herding cattle and shepherding sheep and goats, and little Ishmael has learned to walk and talk, and he's become, enrolled in education underneath his mother's and his father, and is learning to be the one that will become the heir apparent of this entire tent city. That's what's been going on. And then God steps back in with more of the story. Genesis 17, verse 1. When Abram was 99 years old, he who is appeared to Abram and said to him, I am God Almighty. Now, more than likely, you have a footnote here that says this is El Shaddai. And there's a little bit of debate, I think, as to exactly what El Shaddai means. El is no problem. That is God. It's a shortened form of Elohim and has to do with being mighty. But Shad, a Shad, is the chest muscle, the pecs, or the breasts on a woman. And so the question is, are we referring to musculature, as in really, really strong, check the pecs, you know, or are we talking about the bosom idea, as in my bosom buddy, my friend, my close pal? And it is interesting that the Greek-speaking Hebrews, who translated the Bible from Hebrew to Greek for the very first time in the Septuagint, we're talking about 300 years before Jesus, in the book of Genesis, they went with the idea of the God of my chest. That is, my God, my personal God. So as I'm looking at this text in the Greek Septuagint right here, it says, I am your God. So the personalized God. Now, in later books of the Old Testament, when you come across El Shaddai, they go with the big chest muscles idea, and they use the word Almighty in the Greek text. So I believe that there's a little bit of both. But in the beginning, I think the emphasis is on the personal relationship. So here is God coming to Abram again, saying, I am your God. I'm the God of your chest. I'm the God of your bosom. Now walk before me and be blameless. Now we've already talked about this idea that walk is an idiom in both Greek and Hebrew, for lifestyle. So God wants Abram to live a lifestyle of blamelessness, a holy lifestyle. This is an early form of something we'll see later, and that is, be holy as I am holy. Verse 2, that I may make my covenant between me and you, and may multiply you greatly. Now you remember that God has already entered into a covenant with Abram. It was the cutting of the covenant. Remember that when he had Abram take different animals and cut them up and make the path of blood, and then God walked that path of blood alone, making promises to Abram about the land and about his offspring. Well, here he is bringing that back up again. and saying, I need you to be holy like I'm holy, since we're in this relationship, and you need to walk that path of holiness. Verse number 3. Then Abram fell on his face, which is, it's a worship response. God, the holy God, the creator God, has come and spoken to him again, and he bows face down before him to show his humility and his understanding that God is God. And so God said to him, behold, my covenant is with you. So Abram, I have made these promises and these commitments to you. And you shall be the father of a multitude of nations. Now, nations has the sense of ethnic groups. In fact, in the Greek Old Testament, it is the word ethnos that is used at this point, which is where we get ethnicity. So Abram is being reminded here that he is going to have a lot of different people groups come from him. Spoiler for us, I mean, we already know this. We already know that pretty much all of the non-Israeli people of the Middle East trace their descendancy, their ancestry, back to Father Abraham. All of those Muslim people living in the lower Middle East, the Arabs, we typically refer to them as, they go back through Ishmael, or they go back through Esau, one or the other of those two. But they come from Abram just as certainly as all of the Israelis come from Abram. So that's what God is telling him. You are going to have a ton of ethnicities that will trace their connections back to you. So God gives him a name change. It's a very slight name change, but it has great significance in how it changes the meaning of his name. No longer shall your name be called Abram. Now, the two components of that original name were Ab, which means father, and Ram, which means exalted or high. And I told you at the time that more than likely he was named that because his grandfather had died the year previous to his death. And more than likely his dad, Terah, was trying to honor his own father by saying, my exalted father. Now here is my son. I'm going to give him that name, Abram. But God takes that name, adds a single sound to the center of it, but it changes the pronunciation. Your name shall now be Abraham. Abraham. And so now we have Ab still. That's the idea of father of nations. But the Ham on the end has the idea of a people group. A group of community members. And it's in a form where there's going to be a bunch of them. So Abram is now the father of multitude, of many nations. And he most certainly does, has that status. In the New Testament, we know that every person, no matter what their ethnicity around the world, who embraces the faith of Jesus Christ, are grafted into the tree of Israel, and they are also adopted into the family of Abraham. We become part of the children of Abraham. And so this is what God is signifying here by the change in the name. So no longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be called Abraham, for I have made you the father of a multitude of nations. I will make you exceedingly fruitful. So lots and lots and lots of kids. It'll actually be more lots and lots of grandkids in particular. And I will make you into nations, different people groups, different ethnicities, and kings shall come from you. And that's not just simply the kings in Israel. That will be kings in other nations as well, will be attached to the family of Abraham. Verse 7, and I will establish my covenant between me and you and your offspring. That's that really important word there. I like the word seed, personally. It's a singular word, but it is a collective singular. And in the New Testament book of Galatians, chapter number 3, Paul makes a big deal out of the fact that the seed of Abraham that receives the fullness of all these promises is Jesus Christ. He is the one that all these prophecies are about ultimately. So I'm going to establish my covenant between you, me and you and your seed after you throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and to your offspring after you. And I will give to you and to your offspring after you the land of your sojournings, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. So it's a repeat of the land and seed promise or covenant that we saw earlier, that the land of Canaan belongs to the seed of Abram. Now that is ultimately Jesus. It's Jesus' property. Belongs to him. But for pragmatic purposes, historical purposes, it would be the Israelis, the ethnic Israelis, the ones that descend through Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, who becomes Israel, and then the tribes that come out of him. That is the one to whom God promised the land. And even though he has penalized them a few times throughout their history, them coming back to that land is just a reminder of this passage, that God said, this is your land. I'm giving it to you. Verse number 9. God said to Abram, as for you, you shall keep my covenant. So this is the requirement. Typically, when a covenant is made, both sides make commitments. Now, in that first covenant, where God put Abram to sleep, God made all the promises on his own. But here, God is putting out some expectations for what Abram and his seed are supposed to be doing. As for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your offspring after you throughout their generations. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your offspring after you. Every male among you shall be circumcised. So this is the point at which circumcision becomes a unique Israeli covenant experience. It is expected of every ethnic Israeli male to be circumcised. And it has a spiritual significance, which we find out in the New Testament, that it kind of represents being cut off from the sins of the world, being different. It's another expansion on this idea of be holy as I am holy. Don't be like the rest of the world. So you shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskins. It shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you. He who is 8 days old among you shall be circumcised, which is interesting because on the eighth day of life for little male babies, that is the peak point for all of the clotting enzymes and mechanisms in the blood. It hits its highest point on that day. And so it's the perfect time for this little snip and the clotting to take place. So every male throughout your generations, whether born in your house or bought with your money from any foreigner who is not of your offspring, both he who is born in your house and he who is bought with your money, we're talking about buying up slavery contracts, which are basically indebtedness contracts, all of those males would also be circumcised. You shall be circumcised in your flesh as an everlasting covenant. Any uncircumcised male who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. To be cut off is to be excommunicated from the community. An ultimate form of being cut off, if you keep refusing to cooperate and you won't go away and stay away, then execution is the ultimate form of cutting off. Verse 15. Now, God also said to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. So again, we have a singular sound, one letter, that is put as a replacement letter at the end of her name. And what does it do? Well, her original name had the idea of my little princess, probably the name that her dad gave her out of love and affection. You take that last letter off and put an H sound on the end, and it turns it into queen or lady. So it's a grown-up princess. So Sarah has now grown up. She is going to be the mother of multitudes. So she is to be a respected person. Verse 16, I will bless her, and moreover, I will give you a son by her. I will bless her, and she will become nations. Kings of peoples will come from her. And so now we have this reminder from God. All right, let's get back to my original plan. You and Sarah are going to be parents together for the promise.